Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. I'm Mark Lefonier. It's Christmas from radio's past over the next 2 hours. Much later on, guest star with the episode Is There a Santa Claus from 1947. But first, it's part one of Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas Party, broadcast on Christmas Eve, 1946.
A full 90 minutes of Christmas Eve fun at Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas Party. Yes, tonight we're gathered coast to coast under the American Broadcasting Company's giant Yuletide tree for a Paul Whiteman ABC Christmas Party, a full hour and a half of fun. So hang your stockings by your loudspeaker and get ready to receive such presents from your favorite ABC stars, such as...
From Hollywood.
Bing Crosby, Don Wilson, Kenny Baker, Don McNeil, Tom Brenneman, and Lumman Abner.
From Miami.
Walter Winchell.
From New York.
Henry Morgan, Basil Rathbone, Geraldine Fitzgerald, Patrice Mansell, The Fat Man, The Whiteman Orchestra, and Chorus.
And here's our host, music director of the American Broadcasting Company and dean of modern American music,
Santa Claus in person, Paul Whiteman.
Thank you, thank you. And as a poet once said, 'tis the night before Christmas, so greetings to all. If you sit back and listen, we'll have a big ball. Your stockings all hung by the speaker with care, we'll fill to the top with pop stars of the air. So mother and daughter and father and son, the party's all ready now. Let's have some fun. Go along, we mean to fill your stockings with stars. For instance, I look into my pack here, and what do I find? The ambassador from Broadway to the world. And we know you'll want to hear the special Christmas editorial that could be delivered only by the editor of the Jurgens Journal, Walter Winchell. So come in, Miami, and Walter Winchell.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Everybody. This is your New York correspondence report on Christmas 1946. The holiday glow warms our land. Our cities, towns, villages, and whistle stops are alive with good cheer. The night sings with the sound of Yuletide bells, and the fingertips of trees are bejeweled with gleaming and dancing lights. Families are feasting on love and friendship. Laughter ripples in the throats of little children, Jack and Jill, and Jane and Jimmy. And a home becomes a cathedral tonight. Composers have put the magic of Christmas to music. Poets have sung its dreams and words. But the meaning of Christmas can be defined in one word, brotherhood. A really beautiful word and a wonderful ideal. In fact, it is the password to peace and goodwill. If all of us define that word, brotherhood, with our lives, the politicians and the warriors who crawl this earth would go out of business overnight, because you could then tear up all their so-called charters and pacts and treaties and make confetti of them all to celebrate the approach of paradise. You see, it is as simple as love thy neighbor. The strongest man was the gentlest. His truths will always comfort and inspire those who have faith in him. His faith has never been more urgent. The star of Christmas remains the beacon for men of goodwill who seek peace. And the way to peace is as close as the nearest Bible. We will have peace when people remember that there are many different nations, but one universe. We will have peace when people know that there are many different religions, but one God. And when people remember that all of us came from the same dust. There is not one single social problem that cannot be solved by the Ten Commandments. There is not one single economic or political problem that cannot be solved by the Sermon on the Mount. And the best plan for universal amity is the Golden Rule. This weary world must rededicate itself to the greatest power of all, devotion to God. We can find our way through the uncertain future by following the road that began at Bethlehem. The place to start that journey is in your own heart. Good night and a very Merry Christmas.
Paul Whiteman has more ABC stars to put in your Christmas stocking, so we return you to New York.
Thank you, Walter Winchell.
Is this the way to Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas party?
No, young lady, this ain't the way to it. This is it.
Well, then I have a Christmas card for you. Here it is.
Let me see. This card says, as a gift to be placed in the stocking of every ABC listener, the Metropolitan Opera Association presents its youngest prima donna, Patrice Munsell. We're glad to have you, Patrice, and all I can say is this. When lovely girls like you become opera singers, why did I have to take up jazz?
Well, you might be surprised, Pops, at the number of opera stars who are personal pals of Minnie the Moocher. But the Texas Company's Saturday afternoon Metropolitan Opera broadcasts are very popular with ABC listeners. So tonight I'd like to place an operatic gift in their stocking.
Well, good. And in my opinion, no young lady in or out of the opera can fill a stocking better than lovely Patrice Munsell. But you tell us about your gift, Patrice.
Well, I think one of the most popular of all coloratura arias is the Polonaise from the opera Mignon. It's lilting, lighthearted, and gay, and it's called Je suis Titania, I am fair Titania. With Paul Whiteman's help, here it is.
Oh,
Thank you, Patrice Munsell, and may all your Christmases be bright. Ah, but our Santa Claus pack is still bulging with gifts, so...
Hey, just a minute, you. Just a minute.
Yeah, what can I do for you, tall, dark, and fatter than I am?
I'm looking for a cad, a cur, a swine. And when I find this arch criminal, I'll break every bone in his body.
But who are you, fatso? What's your name?
The name, sir, is J. Scott Smart.
Oh, of course, you're ABC's famous Monday night detective, the Fat Man.
Yes, Paul, that's right. But when paunchy Pop Whiteman calls the Fat Man fat, that's a case of the Pop calling the kettle black. Hey, Fatso?
Just so, Fatso, but about this criminal you're trailing, are you serious about that?
Deadly serious, Paul. And this is the way it all came about. It started in my office around 8, Christmas Eve. I was finishing up some odds and ends so I'd have time the next day for a Yuletide dinner and a couple of hours of relaxation. Suddenly, the door opened, and a man walked in. Maybe walk is the wrong word to use. Crawled or slithered would be better, because he looked like a guy with one foot in the grave and the other on a blob of motor oil. With his eyes pinned on mine, he came up to my desk, clutching a small scrap of paper in his trembling hand.
You... You're the Fat Man?
Yes, that's right.
My name's Alex.
Alex who?
Yes, Alex is enough.
What's on your mind, Alex?
I got a job for you.
On Christmas Eve?
This job can't wait. It's got to be cracked by midnight. It pays off, too, in spades.
What's it all about?
You better prepare for a jolt, Fat Man.
Well, I'm used to jolts.
I don't care what you're used to. This is like getting a slug in a solar plexus.
Stop pinning that crepe on my ears and come out with it.
All right, Fat Man. I only hope you can take it. Here. Here, just read... What's on this paper?
I unfolded the piece of paper he handed me and read 5 words. He said I'd get a slug in the solar plexus when I read it. But, brother, how he underestimated. Those 5 simple words squeezed the breath out of my lungs like a punctured inner tube. And I felt my spine get icy cold. Who wrote this?
I don't know. That's why I'm here. You're the guy who's got to find out.
Does anyone else know?
I don't think so. Not yet. The papers would be full of it by now. But you got to get the guy who wrote that, Fat Man. You got to nab him fast. Don't you see what this means? Don't you understand?
Do you think I'm an idiot? Of course I understand. I've got an idea who's behind it, too.
Yeah?
There's only one man I know of who'd be tough enough and mean enough for a job like this. Bug Eye Louie.
Bug-Eye.
You've heard of him?
I guess everybody's heard of Bug-Eye.
Sure. His reputation's lower than a sewer. He'd stick a knife in his grandmother for a plugged nickel. He'd set fire to a hospital for a 10-cent cigar.
You got nerve enough to see him, Runyon?
He doesn't scare me. But first, I'm doing a little checking up. The Missing Persons Bureau, the morgue, and every flophouse in the city. Then I'm having myself a talk with Bug-Eye. For the next 3 hours, I went through the city like a vacuum cleaner, looking for information. As far as I could make out, Alex and I were the only ones who had the dope. But if it ever leaked out... A little before midnight, I dropped into the Fallen Angel. I stepped up to the bar, and then had a casual look around. The joint was mobbed with the usual crowd, half of them packing guns. The place was tough, and the clientele was even tougher. It seemed like a likely place to get buried from. Then I noticed something else. A few feet away from me at the bar, she was tall, slim, and beautiful, in a strapless evening gown. But her eyes were two pieces of dry ice. She looked at me, and I looked at her, and she slid over.
Hello, fat man.
Well, who are you, sweetheart?
Brenda.
Brenda what?
Just Brenda's enough.
Doesn't anyone ever have a last name anymore?
Looking for someone, fat man?
Yeah, baby. Bug-Eye Louie.
What's on your mind?
That's my business, and Bug-Eye's.
You'd better be careful. Coppers are poison to Bug-Eye.
I don't get much of an appetite with his kind either, sweetheart. And I've got a gun that can talk his language.
Listen, fat man. Take a tip from me. Get out of here while the getting's good.
You heard her, fat man. You better take her advice.
Well, Bug-Eye Louie. Good evening.
Yeah, what's good about it?
Not you.
I was hoping I'd meet up with you one day.
The feeling was mutual.
Don't start anything, honey. Not in here.
You keep quiet.
That's not a nice way to talk to a lady.
Well, you find out how I talk to a gent.
Don't reach for your gun, Bug-Eye.
What are you doing here, fat man? What do you want?
An explanation.
For what?
For this.
Oh, so it got back to you, huh?
I'll say it did. Now, out with it, you murderous weasel. Is it true or isn't it?
You'll find out in just a few seconds.
It's midnight.
Sure.
All right, rat, start marching. You're on your way to headquarters.
Says who?
Bug-Eye, no, don't you.
Runyon, come out here quick.
What's up, Alex?
Come out and look, he's here.
What's that? The guy's nuts.
It's a lie, Runyon. Bug-Eye was lying. It's okay now. Everything's okay.
Where is he?
Up there. Just coming around behind the top of that building.
I have all a double crossing.
It's a good thing for you, my flat-headed friend, that you did get a double cross. It's a good thing for you the 5 words on this paper weren't true.
What 5 words? What does that paper say?
There ain't no Santa Claus. Yes. That was a night to remember. My blood still runs cold when I think of what might have happened if the old boy hadn't been on time. We all stared up into that sky with a feeling of relief and joy. Even Bug-Eye seemed to soften, and his face took on a funny smile. As I turned and started walking slowly back to my apartment for a good night's rest, I heard his grating, pebbly voice behind me as he called out,
Merry Christmas, fat man.
And now the next gift we want to put in your radio stocking is something very special. She's a beautiful actress who's also a very fine singer. And just to show you how I feel about her,
I'm going over right now and try to date her up. Pardon me, miss. Didn't I meet you at Atlantic City?
Dear me, what a very corny approach.
Corny? What do you mean, corny?
Before you say a thing like that, Junior, you're supposed to give a wolf whistle. A tweet, a tweet.
And there she is, guest of the party. She's lovely. She uses bubble gum. And she's not engaged. 9-year-old Joan Lazor. And now, Joan, suppose you tell us about your Christmas gift to our ABC listeners.
It's Ken Darby's very special musical setting of the grand old poem, "'Twas a Night Before Christmas," as only Pops Whiteman can present it.
And right now, starring our nomination for Miss America of 1956, Joan Lazor.
Children were nestled all snug in their wee little beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their wee little heads.
Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down.
To see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, threw open the sash.
Then what to my wandering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer with a little old driver so lively and quick that I knew right away that it must be Saint Nick.
Rapid than eagles, his coursers that came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, dash away, dash away, dash away, dash away all. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew with a sleigh full of toys and Saint Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof all the clattering noise of each galloping hoof. All bundled in fur from his head to his foot, old Santa was covered with ashes and soot.
I drew in my head and was turning around, and down the chimney he came with a bow.
They twinkle
and twinkle so gay.
His dimples, how merry.
Merry, how merry were they.
His cheeks were like roses.
Like a cherry, all wrinkled with foam. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow.
The beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
The stump of a little old pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke went around and around and around his head like a wreath. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed and I laughed and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. He had a broad face, oh, oh, and a little round belly, oh, oh. That's just when he laughed, oh, oh, like a bowl full of jelly, oh, oh, he gave
his eye and the twist of his head. A chuckle and a smile I knew all the while I had nothing to dread.
He'd walk not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. Then laying a finger aside of his nose
and giving a nod up the chimney, he rolled. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, there he drove out of sight.
Merry Christmas to all and to all good night.
Christmas Eve is traditional for good little children, but right now, digging down in the bottom of our pack, we come upon a bad little boy named Henry Morgan. Here at ABC, we've done our best with Henry, but you know how those things are. Just the other day, he offered to give his listeners radio vice presidents, the thin ones for bookmarks and the fat ones for doorstops. So as you can see, there's nothing to say about Henry except that...
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. Christmas Eve seems like a pretty good time to look back for a moment and see what it was that brought me and the Eversharp Schick Company together. I want to wish you and them the best of everything tonight, but somehow I'll never forget the day I finally got in to see the vice president of the company, who was very anxious to sponsor this program that he'd heard about. He had this big, impressive office, see, with a lot of books and pictures. And when I came in, he said,
"How do you do? What's your name? Look, what kind of program is this here program of yours like anyways, huh?"
Well, it's...
I tell you what we need here. You see, now, what we need here is a good bloody detective show. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Perhaps you mean something like this?
Now you got me back in this corner, Mushhead Maloney. With a door locked and no windows,
and 100 feet off the ground, and soundproof walls, and you got a gun, and I ain't, and we're 12 miles from town, and I'm bleeding to death.
Well, what will happen now? Will Sam Shovel be able to get out of this? Will the mysterious stranger return? And what of little Murgatroyd? Who is Sylvia? How deep is the ocean? What time is it? Who won the fourth at Hialeah? Is that sort of what you had in mind?
Not exactly, no. You see, what we really need is more of the audience participation type show, you know what I mean? Where, you know, where the people say them funny answers.
Oh. Maybe you mean something like this.
What's your name, sir? Smith, eh? Well, that's wonderful. Simply great. And how long you been married, Mr. Smith? Oh, I see. Got a divorce yesterday, huh? Fine. Give him a little hand, folks. And here you are, sir, for being a brilliant guy and a wonderful sport and a great little guy and a brilliant guy. Here's a case of scotch, a new Cadillac, an upholstered chair, a deck of marked cards, and all the land west of the Mississippi River.
Is that what you had in mind?
Not exactly, no. No, it needs more of, like a news commentator, maybe.
I see. You mean something like this?
It was predicted in this column last month, mind you, that this month would be December. Later, it was reprinted in somebody else's column. This boy thinks he should get the credit, but I said it first, I said it first, I said it first. Ah! I got it first from our next president, J. Edgar Hoover.
Is that what you had in mind?
Not exactly, no. You see, it'd be better if you had some dialect in it, you know what I mean?
Oh, dialect. Yes. You mean something like this? We want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
No.
Higher, maybe. We want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year.
No.
Madame Esprit, for you is me, my heart is joyful.
Uh-uh.
Comrade!
No.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Nope.
Hey, Pat, did you hear the one about the two Irishmen?
No, can't see that I have.
Well, that's us.
Is that what you mean?
Yes. Except that it should have an orchestra and some jokes, you know what I mean?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm afraid I don't get it. What is it that you really want?
Well, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year.
Here at the American Broadcasting Company, we're all very proud of the full-hour Sunday evening program known as the Theater Guild of the Air. We hope we're not being immodest, because a great many of you listeners have backed up our belief that it's the most distinguished dramatic program in all radio. This party wouldn't be complete without a visit from United States Steel's program, the Theater Guild on the Air. So we are proud to present Basil Rathbone and Geraldine Fitzgerald in an adaptation of Stephen Vincent Spenay's little miracle play, A Child is Born.
There is a town where men and women live their lives as people do in troubled times, times when the world is shaken. There is an inn. A woman sings there in the early morning.
In Bethlehem of Judea, there shall be born a child. A child born of woman, as yet undefiled. King Herod, now what will you say of the child in the stable this cold winter day? I hear the wind blowing.
Singing again? I told you not to sing.
I'm sorry. I forgot.
Forgot? That's fine. That's wonderful. That answers everything. The times are hard enough and bad enough for anyone who tries to keep an inn, get enough bread to stick in his own mouth, and keep things going somehow in his town. The country's occupied. We have no country. You've heard of that, perhaps. You've seen their soldiers, haven't you? You know just what can happen to our sort of people once there's a little trouble? Answer me.
I'm sorry. I forgot.
Sorry, forgot. They're always saying that. Is your business what King Herod does? Is your place to sing against King Herod?
I think that he must be a wicked man. A very wicked man.
Oh, la, la, la. Sometimes I think your ways will drive me mad. Are you a statesman or a general? Do you pretend to know the ins and outs of politics and why the great folk do the things they do and why we have to bear them? Because it's we who have to bear them, first and last and always, in every country and every time. You grind us like dry wheat between the stones. Don't you know that?
I know that somehow kings should not be wicked and grind down the people. I know that kings like Herod should not be.
Still, there he is. He's king. Now, will it help if I go out and write on someone's wall, "Down with King Herod"? What's it worth? The cross to me, the whipping post for you, the inns burned down, the village fined for treason just because one man didn't like King Herod. Well, that's the way things are.
Something must come.
Oh, believe it if you choose. But meanwhile, if we are clever, we can live and even thrive a little. Clever wheat that slips between the grinding stones and grown in little green blades sprinkles on the ground. At least if you'll not sing subversive songs to other people but your poor old husband. Come, wife, I've got some news. The prefect comes to dinner here tonight with all his officers. Oh, yes, I know the enemy, of course the enemy, but someone has to feed them. Why do you sit there, staring at the fire, so silent and so waiting and so still?
I do not know. I'm waiting.
Waiting? For what?
I do not know. For something new and strange. Something I've dreamt about in some deep sleep, truer than any waking. Heard about. Long ago, so long ago, in sunshine and the summer grass of childhood when the sky seems so near. I do not know its shape, its will, its purpose, and yet all day its will has been upon me, more real than any voice I ever heard, more real than yours or mine or our dead child's, more real than all the voices there upstairs brawling above their cups. More real than light. And there is light in it. And fire and peace. Newness of heart and strangeness like a sword. And all my body trembles under it. And yet, I do not know.
You're tired, my dear. Well, we shall sleep soon.
No, I am not tired. I am expectant. As a runner is before a race, a child before a feast day, expectant. For all of us who live and suffer on this little earth, with such small brotherhood. Something begins. Something is full of change and sparkling stars. Something is loosed that changes all the world. And yet, I cannot read it yet. I wait and strive and cannot find it. Hark! What's that?
They can't come in. I don't care who they are. We have no room.
Go to the door.
Well?
Is this the inn? Sir, we are travelers, and it is late and cold. May we enter?
Who is it?
Just a pair of country people, a woman and a man. I'm sorry for them, but...
My wife and I are weary. May we come in?
I'm sorry, my good man. We have no room tonight. The prefect's orders.
No room at all?
Now, it's not my fault.
Wait. Good sir, the enemy are in our house and we... I did not see your wife. I did not know.
Her name is Mary. She is near her time.
Yes, yes. Go, get a lantern, quickly.
What?
Quickly. There is... We have a stable at the inn, safe from the cold at least. And if you choose, you shall be very welcome. It's poor. But the poor share the poor their crumbs of bread out of God's hand so gladly. And that may count for something. Will you share it?
Gladly, and with great joy.
The lantern, husband!
Nay, I will take it. I can see the path. Come.
The night deepens. The stars march in the sky. The prefect's men are gone. The inn is quiet. But in the street outside, the shepherds from the hills, voices raised to the glory of the star, moved humbly past the inn to the stable all living flowed. The shepherds and great kings with strange and memorable beasts and crowns upon their heads.
I do not understand it. They're gone. They do not even look at me or pause, though there's no other inn. They follow the poor shepherds to the stable.
They would not tarry with us. No, not one.
And yet...
Peace, husband. You know well enough why none would tarry with us. And so do I. I lay a while in sleep, and a voice said to me, Gloria, Gloria, Gloria in excelsis Deo. The child is born. The child is born. And yet I did not rise up and go to him, though I had waited and expected long. For I was jealous that my child should die and her child live. And so, I have my judgment, and it is just.
If there was any fault, wife, it was mine. I did not wish to turn them from my door, and yet I know I love the chink of money, love it too well, the good, sound, thumping coin, love it. Oh, God, since I'm speaking truth, better than wife or fire or chick or child, better than country, better than good fame, would sell my people for it in the street. Oh, for a price, but sell them. There are many like me, and God pity us.
God pity us, indeed. For we are human, and do not always see the vision when it comes, the shining change. Or if we see it, do not follow it, because it is too hard, too strange, too new, too unbelievable, too difficult, warring too much with common easy ways. And now I know this, standing in this light. Life is not lost by dying. Life is lost minute by minute, day by dragging day, in all the thousand small, uncaring ways, the smooth, appeasing compromises of time, which are King Herod and King Herod's men always and always. You who love money, you who love yourself, you who love bitterness, and I, who loved and lost, and thought I could not love again,
And all the people of this little town, rise up. The loves we had were not enough. Something is loose to change the shaken world, and with it, we must change.
Now, that's well said.
Who speaks there? Who are you?
Who? Oh, my name is Dismas. I'm a thief. You know, the starved, flea-bitten sort of boy who haunts dark alleyways in any town, sleeps on a fruit sack, runs from the police, begs what he can, and borrows what he must. That's me.
What have you taken?
Nothing. I tried the stable first, and then your cellar. Slipped in, crept up, rolled underneath the bench, while all your honest backs were turned. And then...
And then?
But something happened, I don't know what. I didn't see your shepherds or your kings. But in the stable, I did see the child. Just through a crack in the boards. One moment's space. That's all that I can tell you. Is he for me as well? Is he for me?
For you as well.
Has he come to all of us, or just to you?
To every man alive.
If it were true, if he had really come to all of us, I say to all of us, then honest man or thief, I'd hang upon a cross for him. Would you? I see that I've said something you don't like, something uncouth and bold and terrifying. And yet I'll tell you this. It won't be till each one of us is willing, not you, not me, but every one of us, to hang upon a cross for every man who suffers, starves, and dies, fight his sore battles as they were our own, and help him from the darkness and the mire, that there will be no crosses and no tyrants, no Herods and no slaves. Well, it was pleasant thinking things might be so. And so I'll say farewell. I've taken nothing. And he was a fair child to look on.
Wait.
Why? What is it you see there by the window?
The dawn. The common day. The ordinary, poor, and mortal day. The shepherds and the kings have gone away. The great angelic visitors are gone. He is alone. He must not be alone.
I do not understand you, wife.
Nor I.
Do you not see? Because I see at last. Dismas the thief is right. He comes to all of us, or comes to none. Do you not see he must not be alone?
I think that I begin to see, and yet...
We are the earth. His word must sow like wheat, and if it finds no earth, it cannot grow. We are his earth, the mortal and the dying, led by no star, the sullen and the slut, the thief, the selfish man, the barren woman, who have betrayed him once and will betray him. Forget his word, be great a moment's space under the strokes of chance, and then sink back into our small affairs. And yet, unless we go, his message fails.
Will he bring peace? Will he bring brotherhood?
He will bring peace. He will bring brotherhood. And yet, he will be mocked at in the street.
Will he slay King Herod and rule us all?
He will not slay King Herod. He will die. There will be other Herods, other tyrants, great wars and ceaseless struggles to be free, not always won.
These are sad tidings of him.
No, no. They are glad tidings of great joy, because he brings man's freedom in his hands. And though he die, his word shall grow like wheat. And every time a child is born in pain and love, and freedom hardly won, born and gone forth to help and aid mankind, there will be women with a right to say, Gloria, Gloria in excelsis Deo, a child is born. Come, let us go. What can we bring to him? What mortal gift?
My pocket's empty and my rags are bare. But I can sing to him. That's what I'll do. And if he needs a thief to die for him...
I will give all my gold. I will give my heart.
And I? My faith. All the years and years, though I forget, though I am led astray, though after this I never see his face, I will give all my faith. Come, let us go. We, the poor earth, but we the faithful earth, not yet the joyful, not yet the triumphant, but faithful, faithful through the mortal years. Come. come.
Come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant.
Come, ye all, come ye to Bethlehem.
Fine performance on a fitting theme. To Basil Rathbone and Geraldine Fitzgerald, our blessings and our thanks.
Part one of Paul Whiteman's ABC Christmas Party from December 24th, 1946. We'll be back soon for the second half of the show and more. It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you holiday programs from radio's golden age. I'm Mark Lefonier. Happy holidays.